This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Hello, I'm Sumi Somaskanda from the Global Story podcast, where we're looking at America's relationship with China. Diplomacy between the world's two largest economies remains characteristically choppy. But could the result of the U.S. presidential election unlock a calmer future? The Global Story brings you unique perspectives from BBC journalists around the world. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Across Northern Ireland, on your radio and on BBC Sounds. This is
The Stephen Nolan Show!
Hello there. We really appreciate you downloading this podcast from the BBC. And don't forget, we're here fighting for you every day of the week. If you want to contact us, nolan@bbc.co.uk. I hope you enjoy today's podcast.
The Stephen Nolan Show!
Good morning. Transitioning. What does it mean? Well, I'll tell you what, we really need to know what it means after that interview in Good Morning Ulster this morning, after the former leader of the PUP has said that the UVF and the UDA are waiting in the background to start violence again should they determine that they need to. This is what Brian Irvine, within the last few minutes, has told Buckler this morning. And the context of this, of course, conversation across Northern Ireland all week as to whether the DUP should be meeting up with the LCC, which includes representatives of the UDA and UVF. It very, very much means that there is an urgent need for us all together to discuss whether these people should be given more time for transitioning, more money for transitioning, if Brian Irvine is actually right, that they're waiting in the background to start their violence again, should they determine it's necessary. Listen to this.
Why they can't trust that the union is safe, why they can't trust government, then we're going to have these groups in the background anyway, waiting for a time, well, okay, a scenario when they may be called upon.
Brian, that sounds a very frightening thing to say, though. I mean,
It's a fact, it's true.
It's a fact, it's true. Brian Irvine with us right now. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning.
Brian, that will send shockwaves throughout people who thought this was all over.
Well, to put it like this, Stephen, you're over-dramatising the thing. You're over-egging the pudding, Stephen.
We are repeating your words.
I have said that if you take any people, and you not only misrepresent them, but not only do you not represent them, but you misrepresent them, and you alienate them, and you push them to the side. And when they feel that they cannot trust government, or cannot trust the powers that be, then basically that's what would happen. There will be groups emerge that will fall into that vacuum. Of course, that's just a fact of history, Stephen. That's just a fact of history. But I think you really are over-dramatising stuff.
Well, you heard
the pudding.
Well, let's just walk through this slowly so that we can establish what you actually mean, Brian, because it's important. You heard Buckler's reaction this morning,
yes,
to what you said.
I was shocked at Buckler's reaction, to be quite honest with you.
Well, look. let's walk through this. Let's walk through this slowly, and we'll get reaction from the community this morning to this as well. 0330 80 55 55. I just want to listen to this one more time, then we'll walk through it slowly.
Why they can't trust that the union is safe? Why they can't trust government? Then we're going to have these groups in the background anyway, waiting for a time, a scenario when they may be called upon.
Brian, that sounds a very frightening thing to say, though. I mean,
it's true.
You see, Brian, you're saying to me this morning that groups will emerge, but what you said, whether it was an unguarded moment or not, and look, you've more understanding of this than I have, it's why I'm grateful for you coming on, Brian. You're saying that these groups are waiting in the background. So that means they exist. This very much speaks to the transitioning. They're not fully gone away because they're waiting in the background in case they need to start again, Brian. Can you understand?
Yes, I understand. I understand. Well, let me just say a few things to you. As far as the police were concerned, they have said that the Army Council of the IRA are still in place, that they're still there. Are they waiting in the background too, Stephen, for a scenario in the future? I mean, that's basically what I'm saying.
So they're not active, but they're there. So that is a fair question for you to ask of the IRA Army Council, and it is a fair question. But let's talk about the UVA, the UVF, and the UDA this morning. You see, if they're waiting in the background, then are there guns also waiting in the background? Is that why there is a command structure? Is that why when David Campbell was speaking this morning, he was talking about 95% have gone away? He was using the wording of virtually gone away. Is this what we're looking at? That these people are waiting in the background and our government is meeting up with them?
In every society, there are people waiting in the background, Stephen. In every society. And if a group of people are pushed around and alienated and demonized, then groups the core of groups that are ready there may well emerge again, and the timber which is smoking could burst into flames again. Of course, that's true of any society.
So if these people do not get what they want, Brian, I'm going to say it again, right? I'm genuinely trying to get an unsensational but true, real, raw assessment from you this morning.
Okay. Yes. Okay. All right. So fair enough.
If they are waiting in the background, okay, why do these groups not understand that the way to progress a normal society, if we can get there, is that if they do not think things are right, you go through democratic means. You don't start shooting and bombing again.
The majority of people within the organisations on the unionist side have a desire to transition, have a desire to come out. A lot of them have come out of the jungle. They're not out of the woods yet, but they've come out of the jungle. And they have actively been involved in community work and the betterment of their own communities. There is a criminal element, gangsters, you could say. They hide under a union flag as camouflage for their skullduggery. That exists, yes, they exist. But the majority of men who were involved have moved on.
But we're conflating two different things here, aren't we? So there is an element, and I've heard this from many different quarters, there is an element who are using the cover of the UDA, the UVF, to make money for themselves and to intimidate.
Yeah,
they are criminal gangs. That's what you're saying.
That's right. Yes.
But what you've introduced into this conversation this morning is people that are not in it for the money.
Yeah.
They believe they're in it to protect their country. They do not trust politics to be able to protect their Britishness. And you're saying that they're waiting in the background in case politics doesn't work. That's not about people making money. That would also
be the same for the Republican side when you still have the IRA Council intact. Now they haven't been violent for a long time, right? They're on ceasefire, but they're still there. Why are they still there? And you wouldn't have a mirror image on the unionist side. You wouldn't have a mirror image of that.
So what do we have on the unionist side?
What I'm saying is, if they came to a doomsday scenario, there would be people there who would answer the threat.
With what?
That's all I'm saying.
Answer it with what?
With any means necessary to deal with the threat.
Well, look, you're on the Nolan show, so you're talking about shooting and bombing, aren't you? Like
I'm
any means necessary. What's any means necessary mean when we're talking about people waiting in the background?
What do you think it means, Stephen? What do you think it means?
It means violence.
The point is,
doesn't it?
The IRA bombed their way to the conference table. The IRA bombed their way into government. And they believe they have the means that they use to do that. Okay. So people do that. They do it all over the world. There are gangs over all over the world who do the same thing. They feel alienated.
So help me understand this.
You're trying to put a spin on it that says there's a group already there, armed to the teeth. They're just waiting for the moment to pounce. That is nonsense. That is ridiculous. And I never said that. I'm saying they came to a situation where they felt completely their existence and their identity were really under threat. Then there would be a reaction. Now, that's all I'm saying, Stephen. I'm not saying that there are groups armed to the teeth ready to do that. Now, the point is that to spin it the way you've spun it, Stephen, it's good radio, but it's not true.
Okay, so Brian, it's too important for that, isn't it? So
yes, of course, but help me understand this.
Help me understand this. We're going to give you loads of time this morning if you want it, so that we're hearing what you actually mean.
This is
serious. So therefore, why do these people who are in the background? Why do they not think that they can definitely achieve what they want through democratic means? Why do they not trust the political institutions?
Well, can you give me a few minutes to explain why?
Yes, I can.
All right, okay. All right, as early as 2002, John Reid warned that the institutions would be, quote, a cold house for unionists, right? Jonathan Powell said that Sinn Féin were being helped by the British government, the Irish and the US, but, quote, unionists were being left behind. He then formed, 9 years ago, the LCC, right, to try to reduce the balance. Blair said, after the signing of the Good Friday Agreement, I will deal with Sinn Féin. The chief constable will deal with the unionists. On the one hand, that was a politicisation of Sinn Féin and the criminalisation of the unionists, right? The first chief constable of the PSNI was Hugh Orde. He founded the historical inquiries team. And after 6.5 years, there were 72 arrests, 69 unionists, 3 dissident Republicans, right? So it spoke that a deal had been done outside of the agreement with Sinn Féin and the IRA. And after 30 years, the Supergrass system was wheeled out of mothballs and aimed at one section of the community. It cost millions of pounds. There was no result at the end of it. But it was just an anti-propaganda, drip-drip of black propaganda against one section of the community. It was blatantly sectarian. And then we had the revelation of the on-the-runs and the royal pardons. 200 comfort letters and 100 royal pardons to
this is all
the
in the past. Isn't
now,
it?
Hold on a minute. Wait a minute. The on the runs and the royal pardons is not the past, even. It's pertinent to the whole legacy issue. Because you've been talking about legacy and giving families closure, and then we have this corpse under the floorboards rotting, and we're going through this grotesque dance. Just a semblance of dealing with the whole problem, and yet the government have done a deal. That is disgusting.
Okay, so I've heard you out, right? So let me bring you back to my question, which is, with all of that anger that you and people within your group, the people that you're representing.
Excuse me, I don't represent the UVF, UDA.
I'm not saying you do. You're articulating the views of some unionists who you know.
Yes,
that's what I mean.
True.
Okay?
Yes.
That's what I mean. So it brings me back to my fundamental question. All of that wrongdoing that you and the people you know believe is happening, why do you not have trust in the unionist political parties, the DUP, the UUP, whichever other political party you feel would represent that anger? Why do you not think they can stop it or achieve it without the need for people to be in the background?
Well, the point is, it seems to be that the most of unionism, for example, as far as the historical inquiries came, the noise from unionism was deafening. Had it been from the other community, you'd have heard it a mile away. You'd have been protesting. There was no protest. There was no protest because it was working class unionists were getting in the neck. You know, so there was a disconnect, a class disconnect between unionism, working class unionism, and middle class unionism.
But Brian, my question is, why do you not think these people believe in the political? This is like so much of an important question, right? I'm going to try to talk it through with you. Why is the likes of Gavin Robinson, or Mike Nesbitt now in the UUP, or any other political party? Why are you not confident that there is no need for those people in the background? What is it about those parties that isn't connecting with the people who you're talking about?
It's not really a question of that. The fact is that they've been overridden and undermined sometimes by the government of the United Kingdom.
But that's politics. That's a democracy.
That may be politics, but it alienates people and it makes people angry. And if you alienate people and make them angry, you have to suffer the consequences. You have to be aware that there will be consequences to that.
But you see, again, Brian,
there's almost a feeling of helplessness or hopelessness sometimes.
I want to talk about that. But I want to talk about that, right? I want to talk about that. But I want to just, and you're going to go boogaloo here, but I think it's right for me to, me to point out what you've just said a matter of seconds ago. Yeah. If you make people angry, you're going to have to suffer the consequences. That's not normal.
Suffer the consequences. Any society will be the same. Any society will not be the same.
Any society is not the same. We all try to, in any democracy, empower people through democracy to change the country they're living in.
Where was the democracy when they did deals outside of the Good Friday Agreement? Where was the democracy there? Where was the democracy when the protocol was imposed upon Northern Ireland and undermined the principle of consent that was contained in the
sovereign agreement? That was the sovereign government in the country that you want to remain in that made that decision.
The sovereign government can do anything it wants, because it's a sovereign government. There's no morality there's nothing new. Right or wrong there. It's just politics then, Stephen, is it?
But is it not always wrong to use violence to achieve a political objective?
Well, could you tell that to the Ukrainians and the Russians? Could you tell it to the British who are selling arms to Israel in the Middle East? Could you tell it to the Hamas and the Palestinians? Could you tell it to that?
Have a look at
the bloodstained fabric of history since the time Cain slew Abel.
But Brian, are the days of Northern Ireland ever going to war again, if you believe it was a war? Are they not definitely over?
Well, I hope and pray that they are, Steve. I personally hope and pray. I personally would work towards that end. But there's a lot of things that need to be resolved. And I think that the unionist people, the loyalist people, have to be brought in from the cold. And they've been alienated. They've been misrepresented. It's just been bad the way they've been treated. And I think sometimes their political representatives
I was saying this to someone on the phone. I had a long conversation last night to someone on the phone. When you and others talk about the loyalists need to be brought within the cold, loyalist is such a broad term. There will be quite a few people listening to this morning who will describe themselves as a loyalist. And they will never, ever contemplate violence or the need for people to be in the background. A loyalist can be someone that objects to the UDA and UVF still existing.
Yeah, of course. Yes.
So this term, the loyalists need this and the loyalists need that. There are many different types of loyalists, aren't there?
Put it like this. A large group in our society have, I believe, been badly treated. I believe that a whole society has been badly treated. I believe our whole society has been bad under investment and virtually every aspect of our society. The agreement promised a financial dividend. What did we get? We got austerity. We got cuts, right? I mean, that these promises were broken. Right? Well, there's confidence in the union. The union will see it. Well, since the introduction of the protocol, a lot of people don't believe that anymore. Right?
The biggest unionist party in the DUP, which is the DUP,
yeah,
by their own words, they oversold the promises to you. They spoofed to you.
Fair enough. Yes, all right.
That's what your biggest unionist party have admitted
enough. I'm not a DUP man. I would be opposed to the DUP.
Here's my point. Why are you not focused on trying to either, you know, influence the DUP or the UP or any other party, or create a political party which will achieve your means without people waiting in the background with the inference that there's a possibility if they don't get what they want, they're going to bring violence back?
Well, when you apply that to Sinn Féin, when we have the Army Council still intact, Stephen. The Army Council are still intact. Why are the Army Council still intact? Because they fear in the future that promises will be broken.
Well, the IRA decommissioned, didn't they?
Sorry?
The IRA decommissioned, didn't they?
Did they decommission everything? I don't know. But certainly,
can you give me a sense of the... Because, again, I'm asking these open questions because I don't want this to be about sound bites.
Yes.
So, in terms of the UDA and UVF, straight question, straight answer, please. I don't think I can accuse you of not straight talking.
Yeah.
Does the UDA and UVF then still have weapons in the background, should they need them?
I do not believe that the UVF or UDA command have weapons in the background. There may be elements within those organizations, small elements, which do. That's all I can say. And I'm not absolutely sure even of that.
But they're hardly waiting in the background with water pistols, are they? So what would be the point of them waiting in the background if they don't have weapons?
You've jumped on this, waiting in the background. As if there were an armed group, the arms and the teeth, waiting in the background, waiting to raise. In the same way that the IRA Army Council was waiting in the background. Not doing anything at the minute, but it's there. And there will always be people who will be there to step into an emergency situation. In the same way that in the Second World War there were people who joined up against the Nazis. And that's the same in every country who comes under threat.
What does David Campbell, do you believe, mean when he talks about the elements of the UDA and UVF that are represented by the LCC, that they've virtually gone away? So he's not saying they've gone away. What does that mean, that they've nearly gone away? What are they still doing, Brian?
Well, I mean, basically, I believe that the vast majority of unionists, working-class unionists, loyalists, want peace and want stability in Northern Ireland. And I believe they're working towards that goal. And I believe there are men who have risked an awful lot and subjected themselves to danger, sometimes in order to achieve that. And I believe that that's their main goal. As I say, they're out in the jungle, but they're not in the woods yet, and they need to get out.
But help me understand what that... So, the IRC's most recent report says that there are 12,500 members in the UVF and UDA. So, tell me what they're doing. What are they actually doing?
Well, the point is, I don't know. I don't know exactly what they're doing, Stephen. I have not been in politics for a lot of years now, so I haven't So I don't represent or speak for that for anybody but myself, Stephen. You know, and I, as a citizen of Northern Ireland and as a citizen of and as a resident of Belfast, that's all I can speak for. I can't speak for the UVA, for the UDA.
Do you believe there is a need for them to be in the background?
Personally, no. At this present time, no, I do not believe that. No. Yeah. That's my view.
Sorry, what did you say?
I do not believe there needs to be any violence at all from anywhere at this particular time. But I would say this to you, Stephen. In order for people to trust the government and, say, the police force, the police force and the government have to show themselves trustworthy. And for a long time, they have not shown themselves to be trustworthy. I mean, there was a Kevin Sheehy, who headed up the drug squad, actually resigned from his position. And he he was not allowed to carry out his duties because of elements within the police and the security forces. That's just a fact. It's a matter of record.
Can I ask you this? Do you believe that the UDA, UVF are involved in the background in any way, or actually front and centre in the intimidation around social housing that we see, where people are driven out of their homes if they're a Catholic, the racist, the abhorrent racism that we've seen, the anti-protocol riots that we've seen, the anti-protocol protests that we've seen? Are there elements of the UDA and UVF involved in all of that?
Well, I believe that there probably are, yes. But there are also people who are not the UDA and these organisations who are involved as well. Yes, certainly. There we are. And I agree with you. It is reprehensible that the vulnerable people, the migrants who are here, it's disgusting and abhorrent. And I'm ashamed of anybody from my community who would intimidate a person from a different country who's maybe fleeing persecution.
And does it legitimise the paramilitaries if they have access to our government ministers, or does it encourage them that purely democratic means is the way forward because they're getting a taste of it? They're meeting
Look, the point is, in every organisation, Stephen, whether it's the police, whether it's teaching or whatever it is, you get bad apples, you get bad people. And people who use the organisation to get up to all kinds of everything. I mean, there's a policeman who raped there recently, and who's been just jailed. But you can't blame the whole police force for that. And there are elements within these organisations who are gangsters. But you can't blame the organisation for them, for their existence.
But the organisations in themselves are prescribed organisations. So therefore, look, and I know Northern Ireland's a complex place, but do we not have to have a benchmark? Do we not have to have some type of benchmark which says you abide by the law? We can't have the law of the jungle. We can't have people deciding that they're outside the law.
I agree with you totally.
How close could we be, in your view, to David Campbell being able to say, not they've virtually gone away, it's over?
Well, I hope and pray that will be soon, Stephen. I hope and pray that will be very soon. And the LCC, I believe, have tried and striven to contribute to their community. The only thing I would have against the LCC was that stupid statement about the wee Irish school and how it should be blocked by the education minister. I thought that was reprehensible. That was disgusting, you know. But, you know, they were given the impression that these guys were bully boys. Can you imagine these 3- and 4-year-olds, you know, goose-stepping up the Montgomery Road, you know, nappy pins glinting in the sunshine? They were a threat to nobody, you know. And I was disgusted with that.
And final question, should there be a date for the transitioning to happen, or else all contact stops?
I think it would be very difficult to, if you had just a specific date, right? And it would still be very difficult for them still to, say, curb some of their members, right? But I think certainly there should be a ballpark, there should be targets and aims, yeah. I think that would be a good thing. And I think it would be helpful just to be John Cale led a think tank there, and some of his recommendations were excellent.
I do want to ask just one final question, which is this. You're the former leader of the PUP. You have an understanding of a deep understanding of politics and some of the communities you've been talking about this morning. Is there anything you can say, Brian, to reach out to reassure people, for example, within the nationalist community and others, that if they're fearful about what you've said today, you're not saying you want it to happen, you're not saying that you're in any way involved with these groups, but you are saying that there are people in the background who could go back to this again. That might frighten a lot of people in this country. What would you say to them?
That would have to be a very extreme scenario. That would really have to be an emergency situation where Britain threatened to withdraw or threatened to unite Ireland. You know, that would be a very, very extreme situation. And
that's a Good Friday Agreement you're talking about, Pete. The united Ireland might happen through democratic means.
Well, if it happens through democratic means, fair enough. Not a problem. If there's United Ireland by consent, not a problem.
Happen without that. You know that.
Well, a lot of things have happened without consent. I mean, we had the Good Friday Agreement, Stephen. We had the whole principle of the Good Friday of consent enshrined in the Good Friday Agreement, and then we had the protocol, and then we had the border down the Irish Sea. And then there's a lot of things that have happened here and stuff that needs to be redressed, especially the legacy issue as well for both sections of our community. But I would say, look, as far as the nationalist people are concerned, the Lord bless them. I wish them all the best. There's no threat from the paramilitaries at this particular time to anybody in the nationalist community. In fact, it's an argument really between unionism and the British government. It probably always was that.
Okay. Brian, I hope you think we've given you time this morning and space.
Yeah, indeed, Stephen. Thank you very much indeed. Yes, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Really grateful for you coming on. Well, look, we're going to clear the decks for some of the stuff we've got this morning because it's really important that we talk about this today. Michael, morning, Michael.
Morning, Stephen.
What do you think? Thanks for calling us. Go ahead.
What I would have liked to ask Brian was... is the union safe without the threat of loyalist violence? That's what I would like to ask them. Can you hear me?
I can hear you absolutely loud and clear. What do you interpret about what the reality is for these groups, the UVF, UDA?
I think they should have been gone off the scene a long time ago. They've tried a number of times to get on to the democratic process, and they have went to the people, and the people have rejected them. They have to accept that now. The people have rejected them at the ballot. So I don't see why they're still there. Honestly, don't.
Well, clearly the DUP do, because they're meeting up with them. They're trying to get them to, you know, there's no doubt. I don't want to in any way... misrepresent what Gavin Robertson, the leader of the DUP, his position is. He was on Talkback yesterday. His objective is for these people to go away, but he thinks we need to engage with them while they're still here and help them transition. For how long? Like, we keep on going back to that question. DUP have set no deadline after which they won't meet them. They just continue to have access now to our government ministers. And is that the right thing? If they are feeling that they're voiceless, if they are genuinely interested in education, genuinely interested in Gordon Lyons' department, housing, for example, Is it good that you engage them, or should they be shunned?
There's plenty of ways for them to engage without engaging through the LCC, stroke UVF, UDA. There's plenty of ways for them to engage. There's political parties all around the country ready to engage with the people on the ground. I don't see why it needs to be that wee threat of violence sitting at the background to try and give them a place at the table.
Gareth next. Morning, Gareth. Thank you for calling us. Go ahead, sir.
Morning, Stephen. I'll totally honest with you. That was very depressing, listening to Brian there. I'm quite frightening, to be honest with you, saying at this present time, there's no need for these paramilitaries. Not a case of go away, don't come back, we'll never need you. At this present time, to me, sounds very much like a threat. If we don't get what we want...
Well, he's not threatening anyone, is he?
No,
he's
no, but
it, very
but them
clear.
Words, them words at this present
it was
time...
It was his assessment of where the UDN UVF is. He's not in it.
Yeah, but I think Brian feels to accept equality. I think Brian feels to accept democracy. That's very
well, he said he
with,
would accept the principle of consent.
Well, not. Well, he complained about all the different things... that's went against the loyalist community, unionist community, that was put there by the British government. They won't accept it unless it's on their terms. And this is what the LCC is about. They want everything on their terms, and that's it. So the bottom line is, they represent people who are active in crime. And for Brian to turn around and say in certain elements, for Brian to turn around and say it wasn't like that before, it was, Stephen, everybody knows that the UVF and UDA were always involved in crime, always were. Extortion, racketeering, prostitution, drugs. They've always done it and are still doing it today. That is a fact. That's not my opinion. That is a fact. But the LCC, for somehow, have a voice. They have a voice in the media. They have a voice with the DUP politicians because the DUP need them. DUP need their votes. And without their votes, the DUP wouldn't exist.
Well, but all, David Campbell sad, this morning, really when David was speaking to Buckler this morning, he distinguished between different parts of the UVF and UDA, didn't he? And he was really saying that there are two different UVFs. There's one of them which where the transition is nearly complete, and those are the people he's saying are in and represented by the LCC, and he's saying that there are then other UVFs and UDAs outside it who are simply criminal gangs. That's what he was saying.
Stephen, like, you know, let's be honest. How can we take these their word for anything? Let's listen to the people. I'm not saying to listen to me. Let's listen to the people who live in the States. Let's listen to the people who are suffering, who are under control from the UVF as a whole, UDA as a whole. There's a number of members, I spoke to you last time about this, there's a number of members who want to leave these organisations that can't. They have kids now, they have families now, and they've realised that it was a big mistake. They want to leave, but they can't, they have to pay thousands of pounds. So I'll say to David Campbell, the LCC, the DUP, put out a statement for anybody who wants to leave these paramilitaries that can leave. And anybody who's forced to pay money, come to them and they will help them. They won't do that because it's controlled, Stephen. It always was and it always will be because it's about one thing at the end of the day, two things, money and power. That's it.
Gareth, thank you. Good morning. Former Director of Communications, now commentator, Alex Kane with us today. Well, my goodness, Brian Irvine's contribution this morning, Alex, has focused the debate. Who are these people? Why haven't they gone away? And Brian's analysis is they're waiting in the background.
Morning, Stephen. I think two things to say. First of all, about the LCC since its inception. It was set up, you know, almost a decade ago. Its primary purpose was to complete the transition because the period between 1994 and 2015, not much seems to have happened. My worry, in turn, the personal worry with the LCC right now, is that its main task, in fact, that David Campbell was even able to refer to different sections of loyalist paramilitary, they need to focus entirely on the transition, get that complete before they get involved in anything else. But in terms of the bigger thing, Stephen, and Brian touched upon it there, It's this perception within loyalism. It's this perception that they are on the losing side. And this goes back, Stephen, it actually goes back way, way back to the Home Rule. But from 1921 onward, and particularly since 1972 when the storm in Parliament was prorogued, there's a sense, and it's not just loyalism, by the way, Stephen, it's across all of unionism, I think, that somehow they are constantly on the losing side. Somehow they are having things removed.
But how is that not a failure of the political parties?
Oh, it is. I would say it is a failure of the political parties. And I know David quite well. And I've had David Campbell and others, and I've spoken to many people in various organisations over the years. And I hear the same thing. They will tell you that the history of unionism, mainstream unionism, is that it ignores and sidelines working class loyalism. It ignores and sidelines them to the extent that, if you like, they're useful sometimes as a bit of muscle. They're useful as maybe back in the day when you needed protests. But if you look at what mainstream unionism did for educational underachievement, did for housing, did for other societal problems in unionists, our loyalist working class areas, Stephen, it did absolutely nothing. And what David Campbell says, and when Brian said there, and other many unionist loyalists will tell you exactly the same thing, there is this sense that no one is doing anything for them, that they live in a vacuum, that they're not represented. And when David Campbell
says... But it's not true. They are represented, and they've got the ability to vote for whoever they want, and it's not true that they're living in a vacuum.
No, I'm not saying they are. I'm saying this is the perception they have. And indeed, in that 2015 statement that the issue when setting it up, they were saying, we accept the democratic express will of the elected. They said there's a vacuum. We're not represented. What loyalism meant there, Stephen, it's not that they're not represented. It's two things. First of all, genuinely speaking, they think they're not properly represented by the UUP and the DUP because they don't understand the areas. But also, you look at it, the history of small loyalist working class parties is that they don't get votes. David Irvine, brilliant man, absolutely brilliant, made a huge sea change to politics in Northern Ireland. And some of that, I think, sometimes is forgotten by a new generation. But the thing there, he said, was that the only way we make progress is when loyalists are in here with their own politicians representing themselves. Within 5 years of that, Stephen, the PUP had gone. And I think it's about two councils now, no MLS. The UDP, which was in the talks as well, which had a clear part to play in bringing the paramilitaries to the peace process, it's no representation either. That's what they mean, Stephen. But the problem is, there seems to be a long-standing history of loyalist working-class people not voting for political parties which they think have too much input from loyalist paramilitaries. I don't know entirely why that is, but it is a fact of life, which means that they either don't vote, or if they do vote, they vote to the DUP or UUP with no expectation of much being done to help them.
Well, if there's no expectation of much being done to help them, then how is the DUP, how is the UUP, how is the TUV, who obviously have a huge presence in this country, not connecting with those people enough?
Well, it's just, I have to say, Sid, I genuinely can't explain it. You will still meet people who will say to you that the loyalist working classes are ignored. This educational underachievement problem, Stephen, this is nothing new. When I hear the LCC talk about this, or we're talking to the education minister about this, this problem has been endemic for decades, including when unionism dominated the political electoral landscape.
Okay.
It has rarely ever been touched.
Alex, thank you.
Thanks, Stephen.
030 30 80 55 55 is the number to call this morning. Jim Wilson is with us this morning. Jim, you're involved with the LCC, correct? The Red Hand Commando and so forth. Where do you think we're at? You've called us this morning.
Yeah, well, listen to the last lot of weeks. Has been very frustrating, very annoying. Whenever you get newspapers telling lies about who's at meetings, whenever you have people putting in the wrong views, the LCC has been meeting with all the three main leaders of the churches for the past 10 years in reference to education. And what do we get? We get hammered because we're interested in our children's education. We get hammered because we're interested in our children's future. We got hammered by people like ourselves on the media that constantly fill the heads of leaders like the SDLP leader who was on yesterday and said that the LCC is nothing but gangsters and drug dealers and scumbags and stuff like that. Well, that's lovely coming from some. So all she must do is read the Sunday papers, because quite obviously Brian had read the Sunday papers, Brian Irvine, who was a friend of mine, who
Claire Hannah is an elected leader of a Democratic Party objecting to unelected criminality, and it is a crime to be part of a paramilitary prescribed group.
And
Claire is defending democracy.
Democracy. Where is democracy, Stephen? Stephen, okay, let me start with this, and let's try and keep this nation calm. The combined Loyalist Military Command, about 30 years ago, made a statement. And the words out of that statement that are used all the time is true and abject remorse for what had happened from Dusty Spence. But here's two clips of what else was said, which is very, very noticeable that none of you ever repeat these. The premise of our ceasefire will be completely dependent on the continuing cessation of all nationalist Republican violence. The sole responsibility of a war, return to war, lies with them. Now, can you tell me, has Republicanism completely went away with violence? Yes or no?
So are you telling me that you're
I ask you a straight question. Is there still Republican violence out there? Is there still Republican violence out there? Are the dissidents killing prison warders, police officers, and attacking people? Is that true or false?
Yes, that's true.
Loyalism has not responded to that whatsoever. We have not responded to that whatsoever.
But are you telling me it would be justifiable to do so? Is that what you're saying?
Well, let's put it like this. That's what the CLMC stated, but that's what they haven't done. And the further part of the speech, because this is important, because too many people sit there and attack us and tell us this. There's been no response to a lot of things that Republicans have done down the years. The Loyalists have stood back because we want the peace and we want a place to live in for everyone. The last part, let us firmly resolve to respect our different views of freedom, culture, and aspirations, and never again permit our political circumstances to denigrate into bloody warfare. Gusty Spence, that's what was said, and that's what the LCC has been doing constantly. Credit for it, absolutely nil. Absolutely, and do you know why? Because you constantly have a go at the people who are trying to move on. And when you say about moving on and why are you still there, there's the reasons why we're still there. The reasons are also as well that
what
people
reasons
don't
are
understand.
You still, what reasons are the UDA, UVF still there? And Red Hand Commando, are the Red Hand Commando still there or are they totally gone?
Okay. Let me explain something, Stephen, okay? You're talking about wanting to move on. The View 10 years ago had Peter Sheridan on, right? Peter Sheridan recommended that they go down the road of deprescription, okay? And his words that night were, unless we can get to a place where there are no longer prescribed organisations and can prove that they have moved on, then they can be deprescribed. And in 2018, an organisation that I was representing went and done everything that it could to be deprescribed. There had been no violence from them for 16 years. And if you count it now, there had been no violence from them for 22 years. We were treated like dirt. And not once in any of your comedies, you've interviewed me for an hour on your program. You asked me to come in when this had happened, and you interviewed me for an hour. So Loyalism has tried to go down roads, and they've been blocked, and they've been slapped, and they've been pushed away. Every Secretary of State and every senior police officer in this country met us for years. Only since Naomi Long has become the position that she is in have them people stopped meeting us. Now, we know what she's up to.
We know exactly what our case is and what she's trying to do.
Well, let's let Naomi's not on the program to defend herself.
That's unusual for a lads party person not to be on your program.
Well, and you clearly have differences of political opinion with Naomi. Hold on, Jim. See all these attacks
on the LCC and the people out there aren't stupid. These are to get the DUP to stop talking and the Ulster unionists to stop talking. John Cale's a personal friend of mine. John Cale knows the roads that we have been trying to go down, and he knows the insights of these things. And yet of all, when they've done this report and they've done that thing the other day there, did they come and speak to people like myself and others who sit there who are constantly trying to get a way out of this quagmire that we're in? No, they didn't.
But Jim, can I focus this just one more time?
Far away.
Why is there a need for the UDA and UVF to exist? Do you share the analysis of Brian Irvine that they're waiting in the background just in case? Is that why they still exist? Or can someone help me?
No,
with
Stephen.
Why do they exist?
But Stephen, did you read the statement? Why do they still exist, Jim? Well, okay, let's put it like this. Has everything in the ceasefire statement by the CLMC been agreed to, other than the silence of the guns from the organisations?
That was 30 years ago.
There's been no Catholics killed by loyalism in all those years. There's been internal feuds and problems within our own communities, not there. But the loyalists have held strong and steady over all that. And even
tell me why
they
still exist, Jim.
Stephen, they're trying to get away out of the quagmire. Do you not understand it? We tried with the deep description.
I don't understand. So help me
understand. You don't understand, Stephen.
Okay. What is the need for the UDA and UVF to still exist? What is the need?
What is the need for them to exist? Possibly coming out of violence. Possibly the fact that the whole thing in the CLMC was not adhered to. From day one, we have had dissident Republicans. We had dissident loyalists who have now packed their bags and gone home and getting on with what they should do. If the dissident Republicans went away tomorrow, I think that then loyalism may well sit back and say, right, now's our time to move on.
Okay. So, look, I'm making progress in my understanding of this now, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, so have I understood this right? That the reason why the UDA, UVF, does this also apply to the Red Hand Commando, Jim, or not?
Well, we have moved to a civilianisation, Red Hand Comrades Association.
Hold on, Stephen. Can I just because we're 2 minutes from the news... Are you saying to me that the reason these groups still exist is because they may need, in your view, to defend the country with violence against dissident Republicans? But the reason that doesn't make sense to me is dissident Republicans have engaged in violence and the UDA and UVF, thank God, haven't. So they haven't responded.
They're still there. They haven't responded to that violence because
they're still there. But why? But you're saying they're still. You're saying if the dissidents go, they will go. So we're not going to achieve transitioning until the dissidents go. Is that right?
Not necessarily, Stephen. Not necessarily.
So what would bring the UDA, UVF? What would bring them to a total end, Jim?
Stephen, do you not think in the last 10-15 years and since we have done the trying to get the deep prescription, we have worked very, very hard to try, and we had talked to the leaderships of the other groups, and they had all said that if that happened that they would follow suit. Now that's dead simple. We were trying to get ways out of the quagmire of the
if
the Red Hand had been deep prescribed. We had them treated in a proper manner. If people had came to us and dealt with us in the way their treatment done, and we had secret meetings after that with senior people in this country who thought it was the right way to go and what we needed to do, and we've done that, and then we were promised again that there is a possibility.
Jim, we're going to have to leave it there, just because it's the 10 o'clock news, but thank you, sir. Good morning, and thank you for joining us here on the Nolan Show today. We've taken everything else off our running orders this morning on the Nolan Show, and we're going to spend the whole programme on trying to get a complete understanding of where all of us are at here in Northern Ireland with regards to the DUP meeting the LCC. The LCC is a legal umbrella group which represents the views of the UVF and the UDA. And Brian Irvine, who's a former leader of the PUP, he was speaking. He was speaking to Buckler this morning, and he talked about people waiting in the background should they need to be in the background. 030 80 55 55 is the number to call this morning. Okay, lots of people wanting to talk to us. Paul, good morning to you, Paul.
Morning, Stephen, and thank you very much for having me on your show.
Let's just for people just joining us at 10 o'clock this morning, Paul, let's hear again what Brian Irvine said this morning.
Why they can't trust that the union is safe, why they can't trust government, then we're going to have these groups in the background anyway, waiting for a scenario when they may be called upon.
Brian, that sounds a very frightening thing to say, though. I mean,
it's true.
Go ahead, Paul.
Thank you, Stephen. Two points I want to make. The first point is pretty personal. It's my own opinion, but it would be a widely held opinion of a lot of people regarding your radio program. First point I want to make is that the only teeth that loyalist paramilitaries had during the Troubles, in inverted commas, was supplied by Whitehall. The loyalist paramilitaries weren't capable of carrying out their heinous crimes if they weren't assisted by Whitehall, directed by MI5, infiltrated by FRU, whatever you want to call it. So the point that I make, the first personal point I'm making is that the loyalist paramilitaries now aren't capable of carrying out a war in inverted commas. They don't have the backing of Whitehall. They don't have the backing of the British government. They don't have the support and the tools of the British government. So, mongering, I can safely say that our Red Hawk Commandos, UDA, EVF, aren't capable of going back to war. That's 100%, and that will never, ever happen.
Well, let me ask Jim Wilson, because he's not going to be with us for much longer. Let me just ask him about that. Jim, you're still with us, right?
Well, Stephen, one day he'll probably believe his own propaganda, because that is Republican propaganda that loyalists could do nothing, and loyalists were. If loyalists, can you answer me a question? Well, if loyalists were so good at doing all these things, why was there so many of us in jail? Why was I interned? If we were doing all these things and the RUC and they were all with us, and I mean, you tell me why so many of my comrades
Jim,
went to jail?
Because it's absolute rubbish.
This is the IRA propaganda as usual.
Well, he's not in the IRA. He is not in the IRA, and he's not speaking.
I don't let their propaganda anymore.
Okay, hold on now. Hold on, please. Hold on, Paul. No, hold on, please. Hold on, sir. Jim, I want to make this present day because I want this conversation to be productive this morning. The Loyalists didn't decommission the Loyalist paramilitaries.
Who didn't? What planet are you on, Stephen?
Well, did they fully decommission? Did they fully decommission?
We all did. Was it the same way the IRA did? The exact same way the IRA did.
So the reason that's an important question. The reason that's an important question, Jim. So these people waiting in the background have no means to engage in violence. Is that right?
going forward.
No means,
if they chose to do
the same as the Republicans have no means.
Let's not talk in code.
Well, I'm not talking in code, Stephen. I'm giving you a simple answer, as we decommissioned the way the provost did.
Does that mean that some weapons were retained?
That you can take a judgment whatever way you want, but I'm telling you, we decommissioned the same way that the provisional IRA did.
So does that mean some weapons? You know,
you
are the weapons in the background?
You want.
Are the weapons in the background as well as the people?
Stephen, I've already answered the question. Don't keep answering it, asking it in a different way. I said to you, we decommissioned exactly the same way that the Republican movement did, because I was there.
Can you understand, Jim, why some people going forward will want to know what will bring this totally to an end? So there are political parties, as I've been saying all morning. What will bring this to an end, Jim?
Stephen, the war is over, right? Do you know how hard it is to facilitate the peace?
Tell me.
I've talked to you before. I've told
tell me.
Well, look, I'm sick, sore, and tired. I was lambasted by the people of the Short Strand for being a community worker by day and a terrorist by night. I was lambasted by people in my own community because they said that I was put up for this award by the Short Strand residents. So how does that work out? When you're working at peace, you have to try and be honest and open and work with people you know are genuine. The people sitting in the LCC are genuine. They're against criminality. They're against their community devolving down into what's going on. And they're doing their best to try and move on. And we are moving on. Their sexes of us have moved on faster than others. But in that room, I can tell you, the people in that room want to move on and get away from this completely.
So why don't they?
Well, there's things that are stopping them constantly. Well, if you want to take it, go back to you had the start when the Republicans started the parades. They were denying our rights down the parades, and then they started the flag protest. All the stuff that's been through in our way, the protocol. You know, every single time loyalism seems to get to a place where they're trying to go somewhere, something gets through up whenever people
but
say,
the
oh, here,
but
there's
the
an
protocol,
and then
but
now
the
you're
protocol.
Getting,
the protocol, Jim, is a political decision taken within a democratic process. You don't get, I'm not talking about you here, but you don't get to keep a balaclava and a gun, you know, hidden somewhere just in case you don't like a political decision.
Stephen, you see, there you go again. The organisations exist to try and convert to what people can do in their own group and in their own groupings to move away from violence and then try and bring everybody with them. Because what happened when the provost done it? The provost didn't take everybody with them, and they created the dissident Republicans.
So
loyalism
let me,
do not want to create a dissident.
Here's the final question, and it's based on a conversation I was having last night. Is it the case that if the, you know, they're called the older men, right? Want this all to end.
I'm 72 in a week's time. I hope you're not calling me old.
Right. So, is it the case that if the older men who still exert control over these illegal organizations, is it the case that if they did completely leave the scene, completely leave these illegal organizations, is it the case that we would have more criminality on the streets because their illegal control is stopping violence on the streets? Is that the realpolitik of Northern Ireland?
I would say you wouldn't be too far wrong about that. I would say that the people who have fought the conflict and some of those who are still at the helm are the ones who have been trying to hold back people who are coming through and younger ones who are wanting to create issues and problems on the streets. Let me tell you something, Stephen.
So
said
what
that
are we going to do
people, oh, let me finish. The Catholic
when the older men die? This is never going to go away then, Jim, is it? Because
but Stephen. Let me finish this part. The Catholic people in this country have absolutely nothing to fear from the Loyalists and the LCC. You know, we've got problems internally trying to help and move on our own children with drugs and all the things that are going, the criminality is going on. Criminality and drugs are not to do with Loyalism, it's to do with the PSNI. If they're dealing with it anywhere, and they are in plenty of nationalist and Republican areas, take them off the streets. We've told them not from the LCC, from the CLMC, take them off the streets because we don't want our children being poisoned left, right and centre. But the families that I know whose kids are in trouble and they can't deal with it, I'm as frustrated as anyone is about what's going on. And you cannot blame criminality on Loyalist paramilitaries. The criminality there is within those ranks would be less than 5%. Most of it comes from criminal gangs. And those are the people they need to start targeting, focusing on, and all the rest of it. And those that are delivering death to our communities.
Jim, thank you very much indeed. Rory Keynes, former Director of Communications for the SDLP. Good morning to you, Rory.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning to you. We've heard what Brian Irvine said to Buckley this morning. It wasn't a slip of the tongue. It wasn't a moment that was a mistaken moment, because he then repeated the sense of it on Nolan this morning. Let's just hear what Brian Irvine, former leader of the PUP, what he said to this programme.
I have said that if you take any people and you not only misrepresent them, but not only do you not represent them, but you misrepresent them and you alienate them and you push them to the side. And when they feel that they cannot trust government or cannot trust the powers that be, then basically that's what would happen. There will be groups emerge that will fall into that vacuum. Of course, that's just a fact of history, Stephen. That's just a fact of history.
What do you make of that, Rory?
I think there's various layers to what was being said. I mean, I did think when he first started speaking, was he going to roll back on what was said? But that seems to be not the case. But I think when you unpack some of the issues that's facing working-class, loyalist or unionist areas, as Alex Keane said earlier, these are not new problems, and they're certainly not problems that are unique to one side of the community. And I think what's happened today is, unfortunately, people will naturally gravitate towards the sinister element of the words and be naturally concerned. But what that's done is detracted from perhaps the valid points that are concerning the loyalist community, such as educational underachievement, housing, economic improvement. But again, what the history of this place has shown, that in order to address those properly, and I think it is the case that perhaps some of the dividend of peace has been squandered, is by being inside the tent. And I feel that there's people who've been able to speak on this who are more qualified than me on the issues within loyalism and unionism, but it strikes me that perhaps the leadership that's been given to those communities hasn't been up scratch in terms of addressing those. And I think today, just as another example of that, where people have three or four decent issues which they want to talk about, but have gone about it in totally the wrong way.
Is this programming on the BBC this morning, good morning also, ourselves, does this not suggest that this issue is so complex and that there is so much distrust that what Gavin Robinson is doing in trying to reach out to these people necessary?
I think that the levels of distrust are worrying, and it's something we're seeing not just locally but globally in terms of distrust in government and authority. I do think that what we haven't seen, we've seen problems, but what we're not seeing is solutions. And again, I don't think they've been able to articulate. Well, I think the question was asked earlier, well, what will make you happy? What needs to be done? And what needs to be done isn't a threat of violence to get to that place. And I think that's where those in power and those of influence need to work out, well, what is it? What are the problems? But what are the solutions? And how do we work to get in that place? Because again, it seems to be that the answer to everything in this place seems to be, let's get more money. And we can't keep throwing money or relying on a British government handout left, right and centre to deal with this. We need to find the solutions ourselves. And I think that constructive dialogue is what needs to to happen and a proper examination of the issues and a focus on the solution and not have this shadowy figures in the background ready to re-emerge if we don't get to what we want. Having an idea of what we want might be a good place to start.
Would the SDLP ever meet with the LCC?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think that would have to be a question for them to answer, and I wouldn't feel comfortable answering it on their behalf. But I think, as I said earlier, I think any, regardless of your constitutional position, whether you want the United Ireland or whether you want to remain loyal to the UK, I think it's in everyone's interest that a child, whether they're grown up in East Belfast or whether they're grown up in Bogside or Craigan and Derry, have the best chance in life, that people are living in good housing and have good jobs. I mean, to make this place work well is in everyone's interest, and I think that's what all sides should try and work towards.
Rory, thank you. The Reverend Chris Hodson, heavily involved in securing the Loyalist ceasefires. Good morning to you, Chris.
Good morning, Stephen.
Whether it's justifiable or not, we are hearing loud and clear this morning from elements within unionism that they feel they've been left behind and they're backed into a corner. Now, is that some type of unjustifiable position that they've got? And why are they not exclusively saying that there's no need for any of these people in the background anymore?
Well, I think, Stephen, one of the reasons is that if there is a sort of a lack of confidence in what we call political unionism, that feeds into the communities, let's call them the loyalist working class Protestant communities, that negativity feeds into those communities. And I wouldn't set out by blaming political unionism, but generally there is a lot of negativity in the politics and how they're presented. There's always a fear factor. There's always a something over the hill that's going to be a dark place for us to go, and this siege mentality. Now, that feeds into that negativity, which doesn't help. But having said that, I do think that those within the loyalist paramilitary organisations, they really do need at some stage, and particularly now because we're marking the 30th anniversary of the loyalist ceasefire, they need to categorically state that they are completely transitioned from paramilitary organisations into civilianised organisations.
Well, and they're categorically stating, Chris, that they haven't done that yet.
No, they haven't. And that's disappointing because, Stephen, if you look at the statement they made in 94, which now seems years and years ago, they actually welcomed the new threshold, the new beginning that they were in and that we were all in, and that we were now going to create a wholesome society in which our children and their children will know the meaning of true peace. And that hasn't happened. Now, maybe they haven't been able to do that statement. Maybe it hasn't been possible. Maybe they haven't the capacity to do it. And I think you raised the issue when you said to the spokesperson for the SDLP, would the SDLP...
He's a former director of communications to the SDLP.
Yeah.
Chris, in the limited time I've got with you, can I focus this on some of the questions that have been asked this week around all of this? Should, in your view, the DUP, biggest unionist party in Northern Ireland, should they be giving the LCC access to government ministers before the UVF and UDA have fully transitioned?
Well, the only way I can answer that, Stephen, is this. I don't know of any executive decision or any decision by either governments or the Assembly not to meet with groups that contain within them loyalist paramilitary members. From the beginning, once they were on ceasefire, it was an acceptable norm. And so I don't think it's only an issue for the DUP. My own personal view, Stephen, is, and maybe because I'm a clergyman, I've no difficulty engaging with people if it'll help. But my own personal view is, I personally wish other people would meet with them, even if it's only to tell them, come on, lads, you've got to stick by what you said.
But that's not what's happening, is it? That's not, that this is not, the question is not, should people within the DUP or anywhere else be meeting with these people to encourage them to go away? This is about a group which is an umbrella group which represents the UVF and UDA having access to our government ministers to talk about education, to talk about housing. Should that be happening while they have not fully disowned themselves from the UDA and UVF?
I think what you mean, Stephen, while they haven't fully transitioned into what we would call civil.
That's what I mean.
Well, that's the $60,000 question.
And I'm asking you to answer it.
Well, thank you, Stephen, and I'll do my best. All I can say to you is I would meet them to help, to encourage them to transition. The difficulty that you're raising is should government ministers, political parties meet with them under those circumstances?
Yes, I think they should. Okay, and thank you for giving us your view, because what this does is, in some people's minds, it gives a legitimacy to not fully going away. Well, it's not that important because you haven't fully transitioned. And yeah, you can still have access to government. Yeah, you can talk. You know, many people can't get anywhere near Gordon Lyons. But don't worry, you're in the UVF, you're in the UDA. Yeah, you can talk about housing. It's not that bad to be in the UDA and UVF because you can get access to our education minister, Paul Given. That's what some people are frightened about. The messaging, what it says.
Yeah, I can appreciate that, Stephen, but you and I know that there has been an ambiguous approach to the way we do things in Northern Ireland since the ceasefire's in place. I mean, you know and I know that governments meet with the same people, that commercial organisations meet with them. And whether yes, it's a big issue, and people are right to be critical, people are right to be cynical, but it is the, if you like, it's the playing field that we pitched Northern Ireland on. And the ceasefires were the space that allowed the political process to begin.
And then finally, Reverend Hudson, for those people that have been thinking, well, maybe, you know, maybe we just let it all go on and we don't focus on this. Then we hear Brian Irvine on Gamu this morning talking about people waiting in the background, you know, just in case. And then he repeated the messaging around that this morning on this programme. Here's what he told me.
The fact is that they've been overridden and undermined sometimes by the government of the United Kingdom.
But that's politics. That's a democracy.
That may be politics, but it alienates people and it makes people angry. And if you alienate people and make them angry, you have to suffer the consequences. You have to be aware that there will be consequences to that.
And then we all start asking, you know, what are the consequences? So if you make people angry, you'll suffer the consequences. My goodness, Chris.
Yeah, well, Stephen, I don't commit to that type of concept. My view is quite simple. If people show an interest and a capacity and even a modest contribution to moving on, they should be supported. But if any organization issues threats to politicians or to society as a whole, of course you would disengage with them.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Chris Hudson, thank you. William next. Morning, William.
Hello, Stephen. Listen, I was listening to the debate this morning with Jim Wilson and co about the reaction these people waiting
in
the background.
Tell us what you think. Tell us what you think.
Okay. If I was a young fella in East Belfast or a young loyalist, a teenager, and given the records of the past, answering the call for these organisations to get into some form of action or protest, I'd be a bit worried, because the only outworkings of that, given the flag protest, the protocol and all, was a one-way ticket to a criminal record, or even worse, a prison sentence and a ruination of their lives and their future. So I'd be asking young people in East Belfast, if these guys call you to act politicians or whatever, to act for the greater good of the country, I would need to be, say, be a bit more selfish, look after yourself and your own future.
But of course, the reality of what the likes of Jim Wilson is saying, and the LCC are saying, they are telling you that what they're telling those young people is, do not get engaged in violence, do not get yourselves a criminal record, and they are saying that if they, as you know, older people in this community, are not around, if they completely disengage, then there are younger, malevolent forces that will suck those young people in.
Stephen, who is encouraging these young people to get involved? It has to be some other sort of politician or leader of a paramilitary organisation using them as cannon fodder to get to their own selfish ends. That's my opinion. And I think if you're a young fellow in East Belfast, you should be thinking about your education, your future, your employment and your relationship to your fellow man.
Thomas, thank you very much indeed. This programme's available as a podcast later in the day. It's available as a podcast within the next few minutes. You can listen to it later in the day if it suits you. Thank you very much indeed for your company. We'll be back on Monday morning. Have a good weekend.
Biggest show in the country. Listen again on BBC Sounds. Tweet at Stephen Nolan.
Hello, I'm Sumi Somaskanda from the Global Story Podcast, where we're looking at America's relationship with China. Diplomacy between the world's two largest economies remains characteristically choppy, but could the result of the U.S. presidential election unlock a calmer future? The Global Story brings you unique perspectives from BBC journalists around the world. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.